is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
As a coach, you're always trying to develop different areas of yourself in terms of on-court skill work, you know, concept, all sorts of stuff. You're always trying to improve and trying to find different ways to kind of get these kids to understand how hard they need to work or just how to reach them, you know, how to connect with them at their level, you know. And it does really go back to the old adage, like, they really don't know how much you know until they know how much you care. And that, like, that's said a lot, but that is so true. That is so true. You know, I've since I've met my wife is very outgoing. Like, she loves the guys, loves the kids, like, wants to cook for them, have them over, you know, is interested in how they're doing in personal life, school. And she really taught me the value of that. So she's actually helped me become a better coach, because I'm much more aware of that and knowing that, you know, I need to spend time with these guys, not just on the court, but, you know, at the hub or getting something to eat with them or doing whatever, you know, and just spending that extra time that you don't have to, but it just goes a long way so that they know you really care about the development and how they're doing it as young men.
Eric Hout is the associate head coach for the Kent State University men's basketball team. Hout has been a proud alum and representative of Kent State hoops during most of the 21st century, playing on some of the greatest teams in program history before beginning a now 15-year coaching career. Hout has helped deliver 4 Mid-American Conference championships to Kent State as a coach, in addition to 2 as a student athlete. In Kent State's 6 trips to the NCAA tournament, Hout has been involved as a player or coach in 5 of them. Prior to his coaching career, Hout had an illustrious 4-year career with the Golden Flashes, helping lay the foundation for a championship program from 2000 to 2004. Over 4 years, Hout helped the Flashes go 98-34, win the East Division of the MAC every year, and make 4 straight appearances in the MAC championship game. Hout played a massive role in the team's famous trip to the 2002 NCAA Elite Eight, but also made the second round in 2001 and was selected to compete in the NIT twice. A 2004 graduate of Kent State, Eric earned a bachelor's degree in finance. Hout was one of the top 3-point marksmen in Kent State University history and concluded his playing career ranked 2nd behind only Trevor Huffman in the Kent State record books with 200 3-pointers. Hout is currently a member of the NABC, the National Association of Basketball Coaches, and just completed his 11th total season on the bench for Kent State. Please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the Hoopheads Pod. Those reviews really do help others in the basketball community find the show, so we'd truly appreciate you taking some time to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoy listening. Get ready to learn from the story of Coach Eric Hout, Associate Men's Head Coach at Kent State University.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And tonight, we are here with Eric Hout, Associate Men's Head Coach at Kent State University. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, fellas. How you doing? Appreciate you guys having me on.
And we're doing great tonight. Excited to have you on and dig into your career, both as a player and as a coach down at Kent. Let's talk first about how you got into the game as a kid growing up back in Lansing, Michigan.
Okay. Well, I actually started playing when I was 5 years old. My dad primarily, he signed me up for this YMCA league. And I started playing when I was 5. And literally from the first day I started playing, I just kind of, I don't know if I fell in love with the game, but I was pretty good at it. And there was something about it that I was just drawn to. And literally from that day forward, basketball was always one of the, you know, top things in my life. I played in numerous leagues. I mean, I remember my mom on Saturday mornings, she would literally have to drive me all around the city because I'd be playing on 2 or 3 different teams. I'd have so many different games and it was just a big commitment from her because she had to drag me around all these deals. But yeah, I just started playing and my dad would always play me in horse, and I don't think I beat him until I was about, I don't know, I think I was about 11 or 12, because he had this one shot that I just couldn't make. I couldn't do it. He'd shoot it over his head backwards 5 feet in front of the rim, and I just couldn't make it. I couldn't make it. So I finally beat him in horse, but that's kind of how I started playing, the YMCA, and then I played on some travel teams. That wasn't, you know, AAU wasn't big back then, but you know, I played on some little local travel teams that we'd travel in the state. And then we played in a lot of 3-on-3s. I probably have more Gus Macker trophies than Groundball Classic trophies. then I could probably fill a small storage unit with all the trophies from playing in those deals all across Michigan. We played, I had a group of friends that we played with. His dad was, a screen printer. So we had like four sets of uniforms. We'd travel in, and he had a nice van with like a TV VCR deal. I mean, it was like, we thought we were NBA players.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, we had a good time doing that. We played all over the state of Michigan. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Gus Macker, but
yeah, absolutely.
They're really, really big in Michigan. And then they started some other 3-on-3 tournaments, but had a lot of fun doing that. And, I went to Waverly High School. I was in Waverly schools from like first grade to about my end of my ninth grade year. I played with a kid named Marcus Taylor that went to Michigan State. He was like the number one player, number two player in the country. I think he was a grade behind me. But we played on the same eighth grade team. He played up. And then I went to high school. I played JV as a freshman, which I wasn't happy about. I thought I should have played varsity as a freshman. And then after my freshman year, I averaged like 21 points a game on JV. We had another kid named Drew Doty, who was a really good player on that team. We were both averaged probably about the same amount of points. We had a good year. But I was just kind of looking for something more competition. I think sometimes when you're in the city, you just kind of get caught in a bubble. And I went to this place called Aim High Basketball Academy. And it was at a school, an old school that had gone out of business, Walter French Academy. And they had one gym, it was probably 84 feet, so it wasn't it probably wasn't even high school regulation. Maybe it was even shorter. That was like the main gym. And then they had a back gym that was like a half court. So it was only like a gym and a half, a court and a half. And it was an old building. And Jerry Ernst and Steve Ernst owned it, which was Jerry's son. And Jerry was the coach at Charlotte, which is a local school near Lansing. He had a kid named Jason Bozard that played at Michigan. His daughter played Division I basketball at LSU and Nebraska. Steve was a really good player. And I just kind of like got close with this family through Aim High. I would go to like 8 weeks of basketball camp going into my freshman year and then after my freshman year. And I would literally work. I'd be there from like 7:30 in the morning till almost like midnight, because they'd have like a men's league, like a summer pro-am. And I would keep score at the pro-am to help pay for my camp, throughout the summer. So I saw guys like, Charles Thomas, who's now an assistant at Duquesne. I remember Charles always talks about it. I saw his first son, Trey. I saw his first steps because they were in Aim High and I was there working, during the pro-am, but tons of college guys. And then occasionally I'd get thrown in the game cause they'd be short. But anyway, so Jerry Ernst, as I'm going through these camps, I'm really seeing myself get better through their workouts. And so Steve would do personal individual instruction with me. It was kind of before individual instruction became big. And I spent hours and hours working with him one-on-one or in groups of two, groups of three, playing at their camps. And eventually Jerry said that he was going to start a school. There's going to be a charter school at Walter French, and they wanted to have a national basketball program. And I just thought playing for Jerry, Coach Ernst, it was just going to make me a better player. I felt like he believed in me probably more than any other coach had to that point. And really kind of convinced me that I could play at the Division I level. Cause I wasn't sure. I didn't know. I thought I was pretty good, but again, you get caught, you're just in your one city and, you play against other kids in these 3-on-3s and other things and you do well, but you just don't know. There wasn't a ton of guys from Lansing that were Division I guys, at that time. And nobody from the high school that I was at had gone Division I that was older than me. So I was just, Clayton Birch went to Toledo, but that was the only one. So it was just kind of a foreign deal, but anyway, so they started a charter school at Walter French, and this is before like charter schools became big. I think it might have been the first one in the state ever. And this was back in 96, 97. That was my sophomore year in high school. I decided to transfer there along with some other kids from the Lansing area because we were gonna play a national schedule. We weren't going to join the MHSAA, so we'd have some freedom to play whoever we wanted. And there was a lot of kickback because these kids were leaving these locals high schools, myself and, you know, 12, 13 other kids that were good players, you know, all area type players that all came to this one high school to play this national schedule. So a lot of the high school coaches were upset about it. The director of the MHSA was not happy about it. And this, again, this is nowadays, this would be nothing. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't
be
on the radar. And to be honest with you, Michigan's kind of been behind the times in terms of high school basketball. You know, they don't play very many games. I think it's 20 games. You can't travel. You're restricted on your travel and all sorts of stuff. And you see a lot of kids from Michigan transfer out and go to prep schools and other schools where they get more exposure and play in different tournaments and stuff like that. So, but this was brand new. So this was a huge deal. I mean, I remember articles in the newspaper about our whole situation and, you know, them taking shots at my coach, Coach Ernst, and his family and all the kids that transferred to Walter French. And it was just an interesting time because I, you know, to that point, I'd never really been in any sort of controversy or anything. And I never thought playing basketball would,
it would create it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Wow.
Ask all LeBron's teammates about controversy.
Right. Yeah, we didn't have that much controversy. So that was good. But yeah, it was just one of those deals. So we ended up playing a national schedule. I played against Lamar Odom when he was at Christian Redemption. We played against them three times. We beat him twice. Played against Tracy McGrady when he was a high school senior at Mount Zion Academy in North Carolina. We played at Bridgeton Academy, Maine Central Institute. We traveled to Louisville and played, I think it was like Louisville Male, Louisville Manual. I mean, we played all over pretty much anything east of the Mississippi. We kind of we played other schools and prep schools. And I just flourished under Coach Ernst. I really did. I mean, that was the best basketball I'd played to that point. I mean, I think I averaged close to 28 points a game as a sophomore. Played really well in those big games against like Tracy McGrady. I had like 21 points. And against Maine Central Institute, I had a few games where I had like I had a couple 30 point games against them. And they had a lot of tradition at that point under Coach Good, who ended up being a Division I head coach over here the last 10, 15 years. A very successful one at Loyola Marymount. I think he was at Bryant. So after that year, I started getting some attention recruiting wise. You know, it's a little bit different now with social media and stuff, but I remember Coach Kevin Heck at the time, he was an assistant at Kent. And as a sophomore, he sent me at my first like letter or note, you know, note card, just saying, hey, enjoyed watching you play. You got a great future. We'll be in touch. Da 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 da. And then I started getting letters from Nebraska and Indiana and Kentucky. I mean, I think they thought I was going to grow, to be honest with you. I was about the same height then, and I was different then. I kind of became a shooter primarily in college. But in high school, I was like a all around type guard, really thin and lanky and much more athletic. And I remember talking to Jim O'Brien, who was Pitino's top assistant at the time at Kentucky after we beat Maine Central Institute. And he came up and talked to me and Coach Ernst for like 10, 15 minutes. And I'm not saying they were recruiting me, but definitely was very complimentary and said he would follow my progress and da 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 da. Again, they probably thought it was gonna be about 6'4", 6'5",
right,
and maybe be the next Jeff Shepard at the time. But yeah, that didn't really pan out. It ended up not very much after that. But I had a really good sophomore year. I was looking forward to coming back my junior year. And then the charter school, they ended the program. They didn't want to play a national schedule. They didn't want to have to, you know, fund the program at that level. Even though I thought they were getting a lot of notoriety through the basketball program. And there was a lot of promises academically through the charter school that didn't really come to fruition in terms
of how many students, forget about the basketball side of it, but how many students were enrolled that first year?
I'm going to say, you know what? I think it was like 6th through 12th grade.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you it's probably 800. I mean, it was a pretty big school.
Wow. Okay.
It was a very, you know, Waverly High School was a very diverse school, Lansing Waverly, where I went growing up. But then Walter French was even more diverse, like really diverse school, which was, I didn't care. I mean, it was probably, you know, it was just interesting, a different environment.
Right.
And, you know, it was like an urban inner city type school. but we had to wear uniforms. It was pretty fun. It was kind of funny, but you know, they promised everybody a their own computer. Every class would have 30 computers and you get this top notch education. And, you know, it wasn't just a fly by night. It was, you know, they're doing it out of a coach's house type deal. It was a legit school with, you know, a curriculum, but some of the promises from the school didn't really, you know, pan out. So I ended up, we had choices now. Most of the kids on my team went back to their old high schools. But they'd have to sit out, at least a semester. And I don't know if it's because I'm stubborn or I had a chip on my shoulder, or there were some things when I left my high school that I wasn't real happy about, kind of where I felt like I wasn't getting the respect I deserved as a player.
Right. And
whether I was right or wrong, it's just how I am. I've always had a chip on my shoulder. So I just said, I left there for a reason. I'm not going back. So I didn't go back, and I was living with my high school coach at the time. My dad had passed away when I was a freshman in high school. So I was kind of going through a weird time in terms of just, you know, kind of figuring out myself and just, you know, so at that time it was good for me to live with Coach Ernst and his wife and his family, because he kind of took me under his wing as a, you know, like another son. And we all, you know, we just put in so much work in the gym. It was natural almost that I would live with them for a little bit. And God bless my mom for allowing me to do that. But so I basically tried to play at other high schools in Michigan. Then I even moved to Kentucky. I lived in Moorhead, Kentucky for 9 weeks. This is my junior year of high school. Then we moved to San Diego, trying to get eligible. And basically what happened was the MHSAA executive director, Jack Roberts, I think was his name, would call these athletic.
He'd chase you down wherever you were, huh?
He'd hear that I was out and wherever. And all of a sudden I'd be, you know, ruled ineligible. And I remember trying to go to La Jolla High School in California, because I lived in San Diego for a while.
That's a nice place to be, Eric.
I don't know why. Picking La Jolla, I mean, it was, you know, these kids are pulling up in BMWs and all sorts of cars. And I didn't have a penny to my name, so, but I could play ball. So that was kind of my, you know, equalizer fitting in, was that I was a pretty good basketball player. We had talked to the coach there at the time, and so I was getting ready to enroll in school and stuff. And I don't think they were a really good I don't think they had a really good team at that time or had a lot of success, you know, recently. And they, so he was really excited about adding me to his team. And then when I went to enroll, they looked at me like I had the plague. No one would help me for like 2 hours. It was crazy. Like, and I was like, all right, let's get out of here. Like, something's up. And then the coach called me and said that, Jan Jessup, who's the CIF director, California Interscholastic Federation, and Jack Roberts had talked, and basically like they weren't going to allow me to play, or basically I don't even think want me really to enroll in school at that time. And it's like, and I wasn't a bad kid. I was a good kid. I just was looking for a place to play. And so I didn't play my last 2 years of high school. Not a lot of people know that, but
yeah, I didn't realize that. Wow. So what'd you do?
So I basically, at one point I was living, it's funny, I was living in Petoskey, Michigan, because my high school coaches, his dad had grown up there, and he bought a house, actually bought the house he grew up in. And I was working out actually at Harbor Springs High School. And there I see these two guys walk in, these two kids, and I'm down there doing all these dribbling drills and all this stuff. I had a whole routine, and in comes these two kids. And it's funny, years later, me and Trev figured it out. It was Trevor. Me and Trevor were in the same gym before Trev even went to Kent. And wow. Before we even like really, you know, thought about Kent, and we didn't know each other at all. We didn't even speak to each other, but we were both kind of looking at each other like, oh, he's pretty good. You know, so just watching me, I'm watching him, and we're kind of like measuring ourselves up to each other while we worked out on separate ends, which is just a small world. I mean, it's
That's
crazy.
Amazing.
It was. We still laugh about that to this day. But I ended up, and I was working out a little bit, and then all of a sudden I just, you know, I didn't play for 2 years. So I gained a bunch of weight. I was literally working at an Office Max selling computers not on commission, just selling computers. And I literally didn't think I was ever going to play again. I thought my career was over. I hadn't played in 2 years. I had gained weight. You know, obviously, I wasn't happy with myself, but I wasn't playing at all. And then something happened and I decided to get back in shape, and it took me 3 or 4 months of like really working on my diet and working out. And I ended up losing like 30 something pounds. And I started, my high school coach got a job at this school called Pelston in Michigan. So now I had gym access again. So I was working out up there for a long time, like for weeks. And then my high school coach reached out to Coach Heck, you know, because we remembered Coach Heck from, you know, when I was a sophomore. And he knew, my high school coach knew Coach Waters from them both being playing, in like a men's league. Because when Coach Waters, I think Coach Waters coached at Ferris State or went to Ferris State.
Yep. Yeah, he coached there, I believe. I think he was the head coach before he came to Kent, I believe.
Because I know he was at Eastern Michigan as an assistant. That's right. Where he came from there to Kent. But before that, he might have been at Ferris State. There's some connection to Big Rapids, Ferris State, and Coach Ernst was living in that area. And they played against each other. They knew each other. I'm sure they didn't know each other really well, but knew enough to call and reach out. And so Coach Heck, he drove up to Pelston, Michigan, which I'm telling you, it's beyond Petoskey. So from Kent, that's got to be like a 9-10 hour drive.
Yeah, like easily.
I would have a hard time doing that if I'm today. Like,
to go see a guy who hasn't played in 2 years.
I haven't played in 2 years, like, you know, that I saw one time 2 years ago. Like, I don't know. And this was before you could send emails and film and all sorts of stuff. So he comes up there and Coach Heck, you know, watches me work out for, I don't know, 30 minutes tops. I actually had a good workout. I got to admit, I did have a good workout, but I didn't play against anybody. I was just getting, you know, it was normal skill work type stuff. And, you know, he's like, it's good to see you, da, 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 I'll be in touch. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, he only watched me work out for 25, 30 minutes. What could he really tell? So he went back to Kent, and then Coach Waters talked to Coach Ernst, and basically it was one of those deals where, well, he can come down and Coach Waters had a brief conversation. It was mostly Coach Heck. Coach Heck said, well, he can come down to school in January. I had started taking colleges classes at the junior college nearby, North Central Michigan College, that fall. So I was at like 9 credits, and he said, well, and when the semester's over, he can come in January. And, you know, he can walk on the team almost like a tryout, like, you know,
right.
We'll see how he does, you know, we'll go from there. So I ended up going to, I actually graduated from San Diego City Schools. This is kind of an interesting part to my story. I went to basically it was like a strip mall, right? And it was called, what was it called? It was some sort of like, it was really for like ice skaters, tennis players, kids that maybe have gotten in trouble in their high school. And you'd go in, you'd get like a sheet with 20 assignments or whatever, however many assignments, a book. And basically you'd have to go in there every day for 3 or 4 hours and do your work. And, you know, every time you finished your 20th assignment, basically that was the end of a class. It was kind of at your own speed, and
it was like online classes online.
It wasn't online. I had to.
It sounds like. I mean, I'm not saying this is what it was, but it sounds like a credit recovery kind of situation.
It was. I remember the lady's name, Faye Fintel. But it was like the Charter School of San Diego is what it was called, and it was, you know, because out there there's a lot of people that have a lot of money and means, and it was mainly for like, you know, tennis players that were training, you know, every day and didn't really have time to be in school all day. Prodigy type people. And then there was also, but it was a weird deal because it was a mixed element. Cause then there was kids that, you know, weren't equipped to be in the regular school, high school. So they would come there because they were being disruptive to the rest of the kids in the main high school. So they would come to this little charter school, and it was literally in a strip mall. Like, I'm not kidding. So I did all these classes basically to finish up all my, NCAA eligibility stuff, clearinghouse at the time. So I ended up getting my classes. It was a whole deal. Like, you know, cause nowadays I don't even know if those classes have been NCAA approved. I mean, I did the work, but, you know, just the whole situation, this was kind of before all of this. So it was kind of like on the front end of any sort of credit recovery, you know, go at your own pace online type deal. So it was just, it was kind of strange, to be honest with you. So I did get my, I got good grades and got my, you know, got my transcript, turned out that all in, had my test score. And I ended up getting cleared. So to talk about the strip mall part. So at, when I was at TCU years later, as a coach, we played at San Diego State. So my friend, my buddy on staff, Coach Wu, was like, yo, we got to go by your school, man. Right? It was at the La Jolla, I think it was called like Town Center, University Town Center or something like that. I think it was University Town Center. It was like an outdoor mall. And there, that's where this school was, right by, I remember exactly because they had like an elevator by it. So we took a cab to UTC. We walk around. I find the area where the school was. I look and I'm like, no way. He's like, what? I was like, it's now a Chinese buffet.
Okay, so I got one for you. So I'm a teacher, and I started in a charter school, and my charter school was in a strip mall, okay, to start. My next door was a barber shop, was right next door. And then next to that, Chinese restaurant. There you go.
Hey, see? There must be something with charter schools and Chinese restaurants.
That's right.
And my charter school was in an old Kohnheims, which is a furniture company. I don't know if they had those in Michigan or not, but it was a furniture company turned into a school.
That's unbelievable. I mean, that's unbelievable. But yeah, so I was like, well, that's where the school used to be, but now it's China.
Now we can go have lunch.
Get some pad thai. I mean,
that's
but,
right. There you go.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball Camp this summer. Hope to see you there.
My actual diploma from high school is from San Diego City Schools. So then I end up, okay, so now Coach Waters had talked to my high school coach briefly. Coach Heck was kind of facilitating this deal. I apply to school. I'm cleared through the clearinghouse. I go down. Basically, I drove to Lansing where my mom was, spent a weekend with her. And then I actually met Coach Heck's parents in Toledo because that's where he's from. And his dad was a high school coach. I met them in Toledo at their house and I followed them to Kent. My car is completely packed with all my belongings. I had never been to Kent's campus. I had never seen Kent. I never even drove through Kent.
Did you have a thought of not, I mean, when this opportunity arises, do you have a thought of, I'm not sure if I want to do this, or was it like, hey, here's my kind of last gasp?
Oh, that's what it was. I actually played some open gyms at like Grand Valley State after my junior year and a couple other like D2s. And basically the coach at Grand Valley State said I wasn't quite good enough. Now I was like a end of my sophomore year playing against college guys, but I actually thought I played pretty well. But I remember him saying he's not quite good enough for our level.
Isn't it amazing how that stuff, like, you'll never ever forget that.
Ever.
I remember I had a guy, so I'll tell you my story. I went on a recruiting trip down to Oglethorpe University, which is in Atlanta. It's an NAIA school. And I still remember sitting in the office with one of the assistant coaches. And at that time, I was still talking to Kent and I was talking to Cleveland State because my dad was teaching down there and Kevin Mackey was telling me I could walk on. And I was talking to St. Francis of Pennsylvania, but Kent was probably the place that I wanted to go. And I was just kind of waiting for them to, you know, make the offer to me. And I remember him telling me, saying, you know, yeah, you can go there. He goes, but you know, they're just going to recruit over you next year. And, you know, you can come down here and you'll definitely be a 1,000-point scorer here at Oglethorpe. Right. And then the last game of my career at Kent, I think I need 11 points to get to 1,000, and I got 17, so I ended up with 1,006. And so that like sticks with me. Yeah. Like I'll never ever forget that conversation. Oh, yeah. How he was like, you know, you'll be at 1,000 point scorer here, and up there they'll just recruit right over you. So it's funny how that stuff fuels you.
Yeah, and I know I remember the coach's name. I'm not going to say it, but that definitely inspired me. It just, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder probably after that. I probably had a boulder. but yeah, you know, and it, to be honest with you, probably you feel the same way. It makes you who you are. It makes, you know, it kind of drives you. And without the motivation, maybe you don't become a 1,000-point scorer. Can't, you know what I mean? Like,
yep, no question.
So I feel like that you have to go through those types of things to kind of, you know, everybody needs something to prove. And that's kind of what drove me is, you know, being doubted. And then, you know, people thinking that, oh, well, he didn't play his last 2 years of high school. He's done. He's, you know, this and that. And yeah, so I had no choice. I had no options. Like, I wanted to play D1. I didn't want to go D2. I didn't want to play NEI. Like, in my mind, I was a Division I player, and I just needed the opportunity to show it. Now, I will say this. I remember I went to a game when Kent played Michigan that year in the fall, and they almost beat Michigan. You know, and it's not like they could leave us tickets or they even asked Michigan to leave us tickets. My mom and I literally scalped tickets to go to the game. And, you know, when you're watching the game, you're like, oh, yeah, I could play out there. Like, right. You know. And then I got to – so I come to Kent, and I – my first practice, yeah, I realized, yeah, these guys are really good. Like, I got to get better. But, yeah, so I followed Coach Heck's family to Kent. They were playing Buffalo that day. It was over winter break. I show up to the game. I watch it. They beat Buffalo pretty badly in the Mac Center. We go up to the locker room afterwards. Coach Heck grabs me. And I remember Coach Waters specifically – as he's finishing talking to the team, he kind of looks over and he's talking to Coach Heck, who's next to him. He's like, who's that? Who's that? So that made me feel real big, real special. You know, I don't know anybody. Like, these guys have all been through like preseason conditioning, practice, everything. Like,
right. You know who I am. Dropping you in the middle of the season.
Exactly. And in the middle of the season, like, who's this dude? And I'm sure Coach, it's not like they announced it to everybody. Oh yeah, this guy's, they probably didn't think I was going to be around very long. So what's the point in, you know, really getting our guys, you know, giving him some sort of introduction before he even got here. So, I remember the guys still make fun of me on what I was wearing. They're like, yeah, you had on some tapered jeans with this jacket that had like a flannel pad. Like, they know it. They remember it. Like, said I looked like a car salesman or something. Like, I dressed like I was about 40 years old. That's what they said. So they still clown me about that. But I remember Coach Waters telling me to introduce myself. And I had to go around the whole locker, like each guy, and like introduce myself, shake their hand, you know. And I mean, I was like so nervous, you know. Like, I didn't know any of these guys. And honestly, I hadn't been around a lot of kids my age for like a year or so. Because I'd been with my high school coach and his wife and his family, and they're all older than me. So I probably acted a little bit older, you know, than I was, and just wasn't used to being around kids my age for a while. So that took some getting used to. Well, then they leave the next day because they played Northern Illinois. This was a Saturday. They played Northern on Monday. So they leave like Sunday morning after practice. And I'm not cleared yet. So I get up to practice. Coach Heck moved me into the dorm right after the Buffalo game, literally just moved me in, like dropped me off, gave me a pizza, said, hey, I'll see you in the morning. And I'm moving this dorm and like, there's stuff in the dorm, like TV. And I'm like, yo, you got me in the wrong dorm room. Like, I didn't realize, like, I'd never been to college. I didn't realize that people would leave their stuff there over winter break. They're coming back and had the same dorm. So I'm like, I don't know why there's a TV in here or somebody's clothes or this or that.
That's hilarious.
I had no clue. So I unpacked my car, the whole deal, and I go to sleep, wake up, go to practice. They take off. Well, John Edwards and this kid named Leo Krav were red shirts that year. So they didn't go. They didn't travel to Northern Illinois. So I remember Coach D gave John, like they had to give John and Leo's per diem for the days they weren't going to be there. And, just said, hey, I need you guys to look after E over the next couple of days. You know, he's new. He doesn't know anybody, da, da, da. So I remember we just kind of hung out. And from like that day on, me and Big J were like best friends, like ever since that day. And then I went through that semester practicing with the team, getting adjusted, and just being a practice player, basically. I mean, I remember like, cause Coach Waters pressed a lot. So like, I would literally be playing 2-on-1 in the half court, like trying to break a trap for like 15 minutes straight. And I'm like fresh coming. I've been handling the ball against two guys for 15 straight minutes. It was unbelievable. So I was kind of thrown into the fire right away. But I continued every day, every week, I'd get better and better and more comfortable and kind of figure things out. And, you know, I really kind of grown to the team. Like I really fit in well with the guys. That was John Wharton and John Wharton was a senior that year. Al Moore, I think, was a senior that year, and Jeff Vaughn. I think those were the seniors. And then Trev, Drew, E.T., those guys were sophomores. That was their sophomore year. That's when Trev was actually coming off the bench, I believe. And so after the season, they end up going to the NIT, lost in the Elite Eight of the NIT at Penn State. And after the season, we all have our meetings with Coach. And I go to Coach Waters' office. He, you know, tells me we have our little meeting. And he didn't even bring up scholarship, right? Like, didn't even, like, address it. So I brought it up, which I didn't want to. Like, I was so nervous to even bring, you know, Coach Waters was bigger than life to me. And I was just so nervous. So I brought it up, and he said, we're not sure, you know, this and that. I think they're trying to figure out, one, who they could get. Now being on the other end of it, if there's somebody out there they could get that was better.
Right.
Just keeping their options open, you know. Seeing if there was a better option out there other than me that was here. And so he said, well, this is what I need you to do, Eric. I need you to write me a letter on why you think you should be on scholarship here and why you should be here at Kent State. He said, now, if I don't give you a scholarship, you have to leave because you're not going to be happy here, not on scholarship. So, you know, yeah, it was basically like, on scholarship, stay at Kent, not on scholarship, I got to leave, which I just started to get acclimated to Kent. You know what I mean? So this goes on for like 3 weeks. Like, I have no idea what's going on. Doing the skill workouts, you know, putting in extra time. We're playing at the rec center all the time. And for me, it was like Big John, if he wanted to stay another year as a walk-on, like that was fine. But for me, it was like, if you don't, you know, get a scholarship, you have to leave. So it was just a weird couple weeks. So I ended up having another meeting with Coach Waters, and we went over the letter. And, you know, I remember him saying, well, you know, you can't be on scholarship just because, you know, you like it here, or the guy, you know, you fit in with the team, and, you know, this and that. And so I'm like, okay, I got no chance. So he's like, well, let's meet tomorrow again. This was like during finals week, you know, before you head home. I said, okay. So I'm like, I call my high school coach, my mom. I'm like, well, I got to figure out some place to go. So, you know, see if you can reach out to anybody, coach, you know, on my behalf. Cause I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. That meeting did not end well. I go back in the next day, talk to Coach Waters, and he tells me that he's going to put me on scholarship. And man, I can't even tell you how happy I was. Like, honestly, I don't know. I haven't asked Coach Waters, and I probably should, because I've seen, you know, we talk and we communicate. Like, why did you end up giving me a scholarship? Because I really don't know. I think, you know, Coach Waters is believes in his faith, and you know, he's a Christian, and you know, he would talk about things with us throughout the year after he went to his service at church. And I don't know if it was something like that. There was something that, you know what, I'm going to give this kid a chance, or I don't know what it was. No, I know it was a good player, but by no means was I going to be a starter. You know, like they were loaded at the guard spot, and you know, it was going to take me some time to be able to really impact the team. But he gave me a scholarship, and you know, that was kind of just, you know, that's how it all started.
Head Start Basketball is proud to announce our very first summer 3-on-3 league. Why 3-on-3? You get more touches on the ball. You get more decision-making opportunities on both offense and defense. Every player is involved in the action. There's better spacing and less congestion on the court. 3-on-3 is simply a great game for player development, and it's a lot of fun. Our league is for boys and girls in grades 3 through 8, and it'll be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center on Monday nights beginning June 10th. So grab some friends and get your team registered at www.headstartbasketball.com.
So I came back in the summer. I had to pay my – nowadays, if I was on scholarship, they'd pay for my summer school that semester, but they couldn't because I was a walk-on. So I had to pay for my own class, so I could be here in the summer to work out with the guys, you know, in the weight room and play open gym. The coaches then didn't have access to the guys in the summer like we do now. So I paid for my own class. I lived off campus with Shaw and Big J, and we split. Me and Big J split rent, and Shaw paid the majority of it because he was on scholarship. And worked out all summer, and then came into my freshman year, which was 2000-2001. And I remember Eric Thomas got hurt like early in the year. I couldn't play till the second semester, so I didn't start playing until December, middle of December. San Juan Shootout was my first time playing. So E.T. was still playing at this point, and I remember my first shot as a college player, guys. You will not believe this. My first shot, we're playing against Northwestern. We're beating them. Game's over. Like, there's like 8 seconds. Trevor gets a steal and, like, throws it ahead to me. I have an uncontested layup. Uncontested. There's nobody between me and the basket. There's nobody even close behind me. I go to lay it in, and I miss the lay-in. I miss, like, it rolls and pops out, right? And then I couldn't go get the rebound and score it because the buzzer went off. It was the end of the game. And I was so dejected. I could see Coach Waters, like, this boy can't play.
I just gave this guy a scholarship. What am I doing?
Exactly. I'm telling you, I could see it all over his face. I could hear it. I could just sense it. And I remember Coach Hegg's dad came up to me and he said, Eric, he said, I know you're disappointed with you know, how the game ended. He said, but let me tell you something. That shot does not define the type of player you can be here. So, you know, you got to keep your head up. You got to stay positive. Like, in that, literally that conversation from Coach Hegg's dad, literally, like, probably saved my career in a lot of ways, because it did really get me to refocus and not be so down on that play that I couldn't get out of a rut, you know. It really did. It meant the world to me at that time because I was really, really down. I felt like I let Coach down, you know, my teammates and everybody that believed in me. So I was really struggling with that. But I know then we came back. We played Xavier in the Rock and Roll Shootout, and I passed up an open three because I was still kind of nervous from the, you know, the game in San Juan. And I remember Kyron Massey. I still tell Kyron to this day. Kyron was like, "Ehout, you're the best shooter in the league, in the MAC." He's like, "If you're open, you shoot that ball. You don't think about it for a second. No hesitation." And like having a senior like Kyron tell me that, it gave me tons of confidence. So I literally got the ball swung to me the next like couple possessions after that, and I hit like a 24-foot three against Xavier. And it was my first college points, and I wasn't a big scorer on that team, but I played about 13-14 minutes a game that year, 2000-2001, which was probably more than anybody expected because Eric Thomas got hurt for a majority of that year, and Nate Mears left the team a year early, so like it created an opportunity for myself. And basically, I just backed up Trev, Drew, and Shaw. Whoever needed a break, I'd go in for a couple minutes, and if I made a shot, I'd stay in. If I missed, I'd come out. So that was kind of my role on that team. And, you know, basically I just wanted to go in and play as hard as I could and not screw it up for those guys. So we ended up going to the NCAA tournament. We beat Indiana and came back the next year. We lost to Indiana in the Elite Eight, played a similar type role. But, you know, early in the year, Coach Heath was playing a kid named Anthony Wilkins, who's one of my good friends to this day. And he played Ant over me because Ant's 6'7". He's athletic. He's long. He can shoot. Like, I could see why he'd give him more of an opportunity to start, to play those role minutes, you know, 12 minutes off the bench. And, you know, we kind of got off to a sluggish start. We were like 4-4, and I think they kind of just wanted to switch it up and see if, you know, if I could maybe bring something different, or, you know, if the chemistry maybe was a little bit better at that time with the team. And I got my opportunity. I literally had like a game where I was like 8-for-9 from three over like a 3 or 4 game stretch. And I kind of cemented my role on that team and played about 12 minutes a game on that team. Which was unbelievable, that whole experience going to the Elite Eight. And then my junior year, you know, Antonio Gates was back and nobody else had done anything, basically.
Right.
So no one really knew who would be someone to step up. And, you know, Tone made it very easy for all of us. But, you know, I was end up being a starter on that team for Coach Christian. And Coach Christian was like, he coached the scout team in practice every day, the Elite Eight year. So like, he was our coach, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I was
yep.
on the team, like me, Big J, Brian Bedford, Jake Wade, you know, all these guys, Anthony, like he coached us, like to the point where, like, when we went in against Buffalo, cause we were up like 50 points and Stan put us all in, Jim told Stan, Hey, sit down. These are my guys. He coached us like in the end of the game. So we were ecstatic when Coach Christian got the job. And I don't know. I just felt like Coach believed in me, and I had a really good year that year. I averaged 14 a game. I had my best year by far, was all honorable mention All MAC that year. And you know, which obviously Tone had a lot to do with that, but kind of just seized the opportunity. And you know, we started out like 18-2 and ended up 22-9. Coach Christian, I was with Coach Christian at the Final Four. He still blames himself for my first 2 years because he literally ran us into the ground because we practiced 3 hours a day every single day of the season. And that's no exaggeration.
Oh, I'm sure it's not. Can you just – how much more, like, in your job today, how much more are you guys aware of player fatigue and kind of what, you know, what goes on with that compared to the era when you played or when I played? Because it just seems like that – back in those days was completely off the radar. Like it wasn't even, I feel like it didn't even cross a coach's mind that players would be fatigued. It was just like, we got this work to do. We got to practice 3 hours today because we got to do X, Y, and Z, and player fatigue, player condition, be damned. Forget about that.
Load management.
Yeah. Load management. There you go.
We have heart rate monitors and we kind of got it from, we were reading this article on Kentucky years ago. And like, you know, kids these days, it's different. Like Coach Waters told me, like, hey, E, you're not playing hard enough. You're not working hard enough. I was just like, okay, and try to work harder. You tell a kid that today, well, they look at you like you have three heads. Like,
right.
You got to have some data or some numbers or something to kind of back that up. And so we had this, and we're getting a new system, I think, this upcoming year, but it's called First Beat. And basically there's heart rate monitors that our guys wear in practice, workouts, weights, conditioning, and it keeps track of how hard you're working, your output, you know, and it has all sorts of data and numbers that you can kind of read to see if they're going hard, they're not going hard, if they're expending a lot of energy or not, because sometimes it's, if a guy's heavier than, you know, if you have like a Trevor Huffman and then you have like a guy that's more a heavy set type guy, you know, the heavy set guy may be not working as hard, but he's putting more duress on his body, you know, because he is heavier.
Right.
And you can kind of gauge it. It'll be like blue, red, or green are the levels, and it kind of shows you what level they're training at. And then it also will keep track of recovery too. So like after games, we would have some of our guys, like Chris Brewer, Derek Jackson, and Deb Manley, they played a ton of minutes in 2014-15. So they'd actually wear these heart rate monitors home and they'd sleep with them and we could monitor their sleep to the point where like we could see when they woke up on the, you know, cause it had like the little chart or whatever.
Right.
And it would give us a number of where their recovery is. So there'd be days where they'd come back after a game and you know, their recovery would be at 67% or 72%. So we knew we had to go a little bit lighter on those guys that day. It's huge nowadays. It really is. One, to show our guys, like, one, you know, you need to work. You have more in you. You can work harder. Or, you know, maybe we're working this guy too much. You know, maybe we have to dial it back a little bit to keep him fresher. It obviously helps with recovery, but also just our whole strength and conditioning program, sports performance, you know, a lot of it's to do with preventative stuff. You know, I had no idea what like hip mobility and ankle flexion, like how this stuff can help, you know, can help you from getting injured, you know, and all the sorts of using the bands for stretching, and we do yoga, we do all these different things that, man, we didn't even do back in the day. You know, our strength coach, Coach Long, I mean, he was a former football player, offensive line.
Right, that's same.
We did a, like, man, we're doing like deadlifts, front squats,
exactly.
Like, out on bench press, like, you know, we were doing, you know, prehistoric stuff, you know, but now, it gave us an edge because we all benched over 300 pounds. That was our max. But like, we weren't doing the stuff these guys were today, but it's funny. We didn't have a lot of injuries either on our team. You know, so and I don't know why, because we didn't do a lot of the preventative stuff that our guys do with core strength. Like, no one heard of core strength back when I played. Like,
nope.
Had any idea what that was.
We used to go out, and our preseason conditioning, we would be out outside of Dick Stadium, and we would do this. We call them they were called agilities. That's just what we called them. But we would literally, like, we'd have three giant, like, semi-truck tires. You'd have one leg inside the tire, one leg outside the tire. And you'd have, I think it was either 30 seconds at a time or 45 seconds or a minute. I can't remember. But you would just go and try to get as many reps of that as you can. And we were doing that on the asphalt.
Oh, my God.
There was probably 8 or 9 of those different agilities. So it would be a 10 or 12 minute circuit that you would do. But everything was just on, you know, on this concrete, this asphalt. And you look at that now and you're like, God, that was crazy. Like, why wouldn't we at least have done it on like the gym floor?
The field house.
Right. You know, I mean, it's just, so you look at some of that stuff that, you know, that went on, and it's just, you know, it's kind of amazing. Or from a nutrition standpoint, like when Coach McDonald was there, we ate steak for every pregame meal.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I mean, and even at that point,
your budget must have been much better in those days than ours now.
But I mean, you know, even at that point, because, you know, I was 88 to 92, and even at that point, people already understood that, you know, steak wasn't what you should be eating, but that's what he had done for when he was playing and when he was coaching at other places. And so he just continued to do what he had always done. And it's just so interesting how things have shifted just in terms of the analytics and the data and everything that, you know, is out there for you to, again, to improve your players and make them better and make your team better. And it's amazing to me.
Yeah. Our guys, they have a whole portfolio. Like, when they leave, like a kid that's here for 4 years, like, they literally, we take pictures of them the day they step on campus in the summer, the end of summer, the end of fall before practice, spring, before they leave to go home, like, for 4 years, and they can see their development, you know, with these pictures. Plus we have the numbers too. You know, we have their 185 bench press, you know, their squat number, like all these different numbers, metrics that we keep. A lot of them are NBA combine. So we have the shuttle, 3/4 court sprint, vertical jump, and all these other measurements that we use, and you can see their growth, you know, throughout their career. And they have that they can look at, and that we show recruits that too. You know, some guys that need to lose weight, some guys need to put on weight, some guys need to change their body composition. You know, and that's all stuff like I had no portfolio. Like, we didn't even really they didn't weigh us. They didn't take our body fat, like nothing like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's so,
right. Yeah,
now it's so normal, but then, you know, no one was really doing that.
We used to weigh in after practice, and I remember we had a kid in our team, Eric Glenn, who he was probably about 6'3", maybe 6'4", and Eric was kind of an inside player, and he would always, for whatever reason, Coach McDonald loved to monitor Eric's weight more than anybody's weight. He just always, every day after practice.
Yeah, every coach has a guy that's like in his crosshairs on certain stuff, right?
And he would just check every day. Like, that was the guy, like, you know, the weights would come in after, you know, after practice, before practice, whatever. And I could still remember we were sitting on our stools in the old locker room, and Coach McDonald comes in and he gets the weigh-in chart, and he's looking at it, and he's looking at it, and he looks at Eric. He's looking at it. He's looking at Eric. And finally, he just says, Eric, you're killing me with that 211. You know what I mean? He wanted him to weigh like 209 or something. You know what I mean? Like it was like 2 pounds away. You're like, I don't really know if that 2 pounds on this particular day is making that much of a difference in his performance out on the floor. It was interesting. So and all those stories are just, it's kind of crazy. I want to ask you about playing for a bunch of different coaches during your college career and just what that adjustment was like from year to year when you're getting a new guy in that you kind of build this relationship with, you know, Coach Waters, and now here comes Coach Heath, and then you get done with Coach Heath, and now here comes Coach Christian. And obviously with Coach Christian, you were, you know, he was your assistant. So as you said, you know, you knew him and had a familiarity, but just as a new head guy comes in, obviously things change and they want to put their own stamp on it. So can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like adjusting as a player?
Yep. It was, Coach Waters, he had deep roots at Kent, you know, with all of us. We were all kind of some misfits and cast offs, and, you know, he kind of took a chance on a lot of us. I mean, Trev signed in August, a week before school started. You know, Andrew Mitchell and these guys, like, they were Prop 48s, which at that time wasn't very common. And so we had a lot of loyalty to Coach Waters. And we would hang on every word he said. I mean, he was everything to us. And, when he left, like, that was a hard time for a lot of guys. I'd only been there a year and a half, but he gave me a scholarship. He took a chance on me, but some of those other guys that had been with them, you know, for years, really took that hard. I think that was the hardest adjustment, going from Coach Waters to Coach Heath, because Coach Heath was bringing in a totally different new system. Coach Waters pressed, you know, didn't run a ton of things offensively. Ran a lot of Rover and some, you know, basic stuff, where Coach Heath was coming from Coach Izzo, who runs a lot of half court sets. So there was a big adjustment, you know, within our team. And, you know, Trev had come off the bench as a sophomore. And then as a junior, he started, but he kind of switched to point guard midway through his junior year. Cause I remember the team meeting and Drew, that's a credit to Andrew Mitchell. Like, Drew was the heart and soul of those teams. Like, he was the leader. Like, you know, not, I don't know if everybody knows that, but without Drew Mitchell, like, none of that stuff happens. We don't do any of what accomplish anything that we did, because Drew had the pulse of the team. Everyone on the team respected Drew. Drew could, you know, he was the bridge between certain guys and other guys. He was the guy, like, that they all kind of knew he wasn't going to play favorites or anything like that. He was going to tell you how it is. So he slid over to the two so that Trev could play the point. Nowadays, could you imagine a kid saying, okay, I won't play point because, you know, in their mind, I got to play point at the next level, you know, so I don't want to move off the point guard spot so he can play it. No kid would just sign up for that. But Drew did it and just did it. And you never heard a peep out of him about having to do it. And it really helped our team take off. But anyway, I'm sorry to get off on a tangent. I want to make sure Andrew Mitchell gets the credit he deserves for
absolutely
to our program and to those teams, because without him, again, none of that would have been possible. But Coach Heath comes in with this new system. He'd never been a head coach. You know, we had guys that, you know, these guys had been to two NCAA tournaments and an NIT Elite Eight, like had won a game in the NCAA tournament. I mean, all conference players. And, you know, they're kind of looking at Coach Heath like, well, we know what we're doing.
Right. We got this thing down. You're the guy that needs to adjust.
Coach Heath had a tough job, man. And honestly, he doesn't get the credit he deserves. Because we weren't an easy group to coach, you know, at times. Because we were all hyper competitive and we had a lot of success doing it one way. And now we're trying to do it a whole different way. And then we're adding Antonio in here who, let me tell you, Antonio was one of the best teammates I've ever had in my life. Because there's a lot of stories before he got to Ken of what type of guy he was and this and that. And I'm just telling you, none of them are true. He was the best, most humble guy I've ever played with, bar none. But we're trying to put all these parts together, you know, at the beginning of the year. And obviously we're 4-4, and Coach Heath, I'm sure, was feeling some pressure. Our guys are now doubting the system a little bit. You know, because they're not playing as well. I mean, we lost to Youngstown State, who won like six games that year, four games. You know, and we lost at their place. Like, that was probably rock bottom for that group. So the adjustment was real for that team. I remember Coach Heath. This is how hard it was for Coach Heath. His first game as a head coach, we're playing like a D2 school. He walks into the locker room, and Trev, I remember Trev tying his shoes, looking down at his shoes, and Coach Heath comes in and says, "All right, guys, you guys nervous?" And Coach Trev doesn't even look up. He's tying his shoes. He says, "Not as nervous as you, Coach."
That's awesome.
That could capture his personality in one sentence pretty well.
And he was dead serious because Trev and Coach Heath, you know, they bumped heads for sure. We figured it out. You know, we figured it out. We got rolling and you know, we won 21, 22 games in a row. And then obviously Coach Heath leaves for Arkansas and we were on spring break when we found out. I had a feeling that he was going to be gone. I just didn't know where. But then, you know, we're all nervous, kind of like, okay. So we weren't in school for like 3 weeks because the NCAA tournament, MAC tournament, you know, because we went to the Elite Eight. Then we don't have a coach for like 2 weeks because Coach Heath left and they hadn't hired Coach Christian yet. So like there was a lot of like, all right, what's going on here? And, you know, besides Tone, there wasn't any like, you know, household names or guys that had really proven themselves at this level. So, you know, we all, Coach Christian believed in us. So we were hoping Coach Christian would get the job. And he did, you know, coach or Mr. Kennedy, obviously promoted Jim and you know, that wasn't a huge adjustment. Probably the biggest adjustment was everybody was changing. Their roles were changing, you know, like myself, I was a role player off the bench and now I'm playing 35 minutes a game, starting at the two. DeAndre Haynes came in as a freshman. We really had no back. I had to play backup point guard. And let me tell you something. I did the Geno Ford calls me John Bagley because I would just literally like back the guy down all the way up the court and then spin, back him down that way, and then spin, get it over half court, enter it, and get out of the way.
There you go.
You know, the Magic Johnson, so to speak.
Right.
So I had to play backup point. And so we had a freshman point guard, DeAndre, we had Tone. We had a bunch of guys that hadn't really proven themselves, you know, that we could be a good team. And, you know, we started out great that year, had a really good year. But, yeah, that adjustment wasn't too bad to Coach Christian. To me, that was more like Coach Waters in terms of how hard we worked. Like Coach Christian, man, he didn't mess around. We practiced hard. But Coach Christian was awesome. I had a great time playing for him. And, you know, obviously he's like a father figure to me. I found out I'm having a son. We found out.
Saw your video.
My wife and I. So I sent Coach Christian the picture and everything and just, you know, thanked him because he's like a second father. My father passed away when I was 15. And honestly, Coach Christian is like my second father. He really is. I mean, he took care of me as a player. He looked out for me. He started my coaching career. You know, he was the first one to make me an assistant coach. I went with him to TCU you know, he means everything to me. So, we were all ecstatic that Coach Christian got the job, but yeah, that adjustment from Coach Waters to Coach Heath was tough. And then from Coach Heath to Coach Christian was actually a little bit easier. And then, you know, that's who we finished with. So yeah, the adjustment is definitely, that's a real thing. You know, it definitely takes some time to figure out a new coach, new system. And now you're, you know, teammates are in different roles and it's just, it's so different, you know, 1 year to the next. But, you know, for me, it really helped my career coaching wise because, you know, I have a lot of good references. I was exposed to a lot of different systems and different philosophies and different approaches in terms of how motivation and things like that and offensively and defensively different schemes and kind of had a built-in network, you know, when I got out of college of like what three different coaches and staffs and, you know, people that would be familiar with me as I entered the coaching world. So it really helped me as a coach. Not only in how much I was exposed to, but just in terms of how many people I knew in the business that were already doing, you know, really, really good things in the coaching profession.
If you're a basketball coach in the greater Cleveland area and you have a passion for teaching the game and might be interested in joining the Head Start Basketball Camp coaching staff this summer, please reach out to us via email at headstartbasketball@usa.net.
Did you already know when you were playing? Did you have in your mind that you wanted to coach? At what point did that become clear?
I thought I was going to play overseas, or I was going to move to New York City and be a stockbroker. That's what I thought I was going to do. And then Geno Ford got hired as an assistant with Coach Christian, and you know, G was a great player at Ohio and better player than I was at Kent. And he ended up going overseas for like a year, year and a half. I think he played in England and then came home, and he just told me how like he hated it over there. And like, it's just different. It's, you know, you don't have the camaraderie like you do in college. And he knew he wanted to coach, and he's like, I wasted 2 years trying to, you know, making peanuts when I should have made peanuts trying to become a coach and be 2 years further along than I am now, you know, when he first came back. So that really stuck with me. So that's what I decided to do. I was like, you know what? I was dating a girl too at the time that went to Kent. So, you know, I'm sure that factored in as well, but I went right into coaching right after college, as a GA at Western Kentucky for, Coach Darren Horn, went to a Sweet 16 at Western Kentucky, then went to South Carolina, and now is an assistant at Texas. I went to work for him the first year out of college, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Coach Senderoff actually helped me get in touch with Coach Horn, and I had to go down there and kind of interview, work camp, and that was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, because Coach Horn, he was a former player, kind of like myself. He was a good player, West Kentucky, good program, and he had worked for Coach Crean at Marquette. And, you know, Coach Crean is like, you know, high energy, highly organized, like, you know, one of the best coaches around, and had kind of done it by like always on, never off. You know what I mean? Like always like thinking about things to help the team, the guys, you know, what else can I be doing? And just really, really help develop his staff. And Coach Horn was on his staff. So Coach Horn, he used to always tell me like, you're not a player anymore. Stop thinking like a player. I remember him yelling at me for coming out to the court with my shoes untied. You know, like you get your laces so that you don't.
Right.
Don't ever step on a court without your shoes tied. What are you doing? Like, you know, he didn't say it that nicely, but all sorts of things like that. Or, you know, guys having their earrings in when they went to speak at a elementary school, you know, making sure that I'm aware of that and make sure he wanted them to take them off. And just all sorts of the hours you got to put in.
What was the most surprising thing? So when you go from being a player to all of a sudden now you're on the other side of it. And so you've been 4 years in a program and obviously you know something about the coaches and whatever, but I think as a player, you're still kind of isolated from the idea of what goes on behind the scenes. So what was the most surprising thing to you when you changed roles from a player to a coach?
No, I spent a lot of time in the office as a player. So I think I probably had a better idea than most that we just don't show up and come to practice from 12 to 3 and then go home as coaches. but I think the biggest thing was, honestly, it was the hours. It really was like, you know, just being there. We had to be there by 8:30 every day. And like, we didn't leave till 9 o'clock at night because we either have to like monitor study hall or, you know, work with our guys, or we had so much stuff we had to get done throughout the day and we were still taking classes. Like we didn't go, the guy I worked with, we were both GAs. I mean, we were 8:30 to 9, 10, 11 every day. And I couldn't even comprehend that at the time, you know, and just having to get all these things done and just basically being ready for anything, you know. I remember one time Coach Horn was like, we need you guys to go pick up one of our players. You know, he couldn't get a ride home. Something happened. We had to drive to Georgia. We went to pick this kid up. We got back. I'm telling you, we got back at like 7 a.m. Literally the sun's coming up. And I came in the office at like 10. And Coach Horn ripped me. And he didn't know. I was like, hey, coach, we didn't get back to like 7 a.m. Now, I know he was like kind of surprised, but it's not like that made him let up. He was like, really? Well, you know, you're supposed to be here at 8:30. Get back at 7, take an hour nap, get showered, and get up here. like, okay. So, like, I, you know, that's just kind of how he was. And, like, honestly, is the best thing that ever happened to me. Because if I would have stayed out at Kent as a GA and worked for coach, you know, one, maybe I'd take advantage of that situation at that time. Or maybe he wouldn't be as hard on me as I needed him to be to help me become a better coach. Or just how to learn the business. But Coach Horn, man, like, you know, we had our, you know, times where, you know, I just didn't understand exactly why or what his reasoning was. But once I got out of that experience, once I came back to camp, man, I'm telling you that working for Coach Horn was the best thing I could have ever done at the beginning of my coaching career. And I owe him a ton from what he taught me and just his investment in helping me become a better coach and just learning how to stay one step ahead. That was the thing with Coach Horn. Like he made me think, he makes me it, to this day, I still think of like, okay, what is Coach Sendy going to want from me? What can I do? You know, kind of what fires can I put out or what can I be ahead of so that it doesn't even become an issue? And that's with me to this day. And that's because of Coach Horn. Always trying to stay one step ahead of what he would want me, what he's going to need for me coming up. And just the time commitment and those type of things. But we actually had a kid named Courtney Lee on that team at Western Kentucky, played in the NBA for a long time. I think he might be still in the NBA.
I think he's still on a roster somewhere.
C. Lee, he was, I could tell right away as a freshman, I was like, Coach Horn, I don't know what a pro is, but that kid's different. Yeah, like, I don't know what it is, but he's definitely different. Courtney was a good kid.
He's on the Mavericks currently.
He was one of my favorites. And then Boris Siakam played on that team. His brother plays for the Raptors. The Siakam on the Raptors was one of our other kids' younger brother.
Okay.
Yep. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Basketball world is a small world, that's for sure. All right, so talk about how you got back to Kent. What was that process like?
So after my first year at West Kentucky, Ryan Peden was director of operations. He left and went to Miami of Ohio as an assistant. And Coach Christian asked me if I wanted to come back as the director of operations, which at that time was really a GA spot. I had to take classes and I got a stipend, but they just labeled it director of operations. And it didn't take me too long. I mean, I always wanted to work for Coach. You know, he's like a father figure to me. So I came back to Kent that second year. That was 2005-06. And then we went to the NCAA tournament that year. That was DeAndre Haynes's senior year, 2005-06. Coach Senderoff got the job at Indiana that spring. And Coach Christian moved me up to an assistant coach, right then when Cindy left. So I replaced Coach Cindy on staff as an assistant, 2006-07. I was full-time assistant, 2007-08, full-time assistant. We went to the NCAA tournament in 2007-08. That was Mike Scott in Q's senior year. Al Fisher was a junior on that team. Jordan Mincy, Chris Singletary, Mike McKee. You know, we had a really good – Julian Sullinger. We had a really good team that year. Rod Sherman. So that – then Coach Christian got TCU. And I went with him to TCU, and I started out as director of operations that first year for him. And what's funny, I signed a kid at Kent named Ronnie Moss, Tuffy, and he's from Fort Worth. And he was like one of the highest rated kids that Kent had signed to that point. It was my first recruit that I ever signed. And Coach Christian played a little trick on me when I signed him because we were eating at Applebee's for dinner. Him and Tuffy got in his car and drove ahead of us. We're going to meet with him as a staff. And then, because he's leaving out early in the morning, so there wasn't going to be time to meet with him, wrap up the visit in the morning. So we get into the office. It's me, Tuffy, Coach Christian, and Gino. We're in there. We're talking. And Tuffy just says, you know, Coach, I got to stop you right there. He's like, you know, my AU coach got a call from, like, Nebraska or somebody. And they want me to come on a visit next weekend. So, you know, I'm going to And Coach Christian went off, like went off the handle. And I'm just sitting there like, what the heck just happened? I mean, I didn't know what to do. I was like literally stunned. Like, this is, we'll never get this kid now. One, because Coach Christian is literally just going at him, you know, calling him everything under the sun. And then they both turn and look at me and start laughing, Tuffy and Coach. And I'm like, what? They're like, and Coach Christian's like, oh yeah, Tuffy committed in the car. We were just going to play a joke on you.
Thanks, Coach.
Yeah. So that was my first signing. I thought I literally was going to have to apologize to his parents and his AAU coach for Coach Christian's behavior on the visit. And it ended up, he was actually committing. When we went to TCU, I'm like, okay, I signed Tuffy. He's from Fort Worth. We're going to Fort Worth. You know, I thought I'd be an assistant coach, and you know, there's a lot of politics in terms of you're in Texas, you Texas guys. So I ended up as a director of operations for a year. And then we had an assistant leave and go to FIU. And then Coach bumped me up to an assistant coach my last 2 years at TCU. And then Coach Ford got the job at Bradley. Coach Sendy got the job at Kent. And Coach Sendy called me and offered me a job to come back. He was keeping Bobby Steinberg and Jordan Mincy as assistants. He wanted to bring me back to Kent. And we didn't have a very good year that last year at TCU that I was there. Coach Christian kicked off, actually Tuffy and another kid off the team midway through the year, two of our top three scorers. And I give him a lot of credit because, like, Coach Christian, like, you know, you're always going to know where you stand, but he's going to make those tough decisions. And that's not easy to do, especially when you have a new AD and, you know, if you have a bad year, you could get fired. But he just wasn't dealing with it. So we had a bad year. We were 1-15 in the league, and he wasn't sure basically what was going to happen that at the end of that year or the following year. And he basically told me, he's like, you got the biggest key in this business is the longevity. He's like, so, you know, you really need to look at going back with Coach Sendy, because I don't know after this year what's going to happen. And then now you're out there trying to find a job. And it's hard. It's hard to find coaching jobs at any level.
Absolutely.
So I called Coach Sendy, and I accepted the job, and I had to go back there, you know, do some just interview type stuff. I worked out the guys, met them, and they kind of all knew me or knew of me when I came back. But they had two really good years. You know, they had won back-to-back MAC titles. They had just almost were a game away from the Final Four in the NIT. They had a lot of guys returning, and they all obviously really liked Coach Ford, and Coach Sendy recruited a lot of them. And I didn't really know these guys. This was like the first group of Kent guys. Like, I didn't really know like that because I had started my coaching career and wasn't able to come back as much because I was in Texas. So it was kind of a different deal coming back. And we have a tradition where at shoot around, like, or the night before, all the new people in the program have to go to the top of every arena. And that started with Coach Heath, actually. And so our first road game, we play at West Virginia, and all the guys are like, Coach, you got to go to the top. To me, I said, hold on. I was here.
Oh, I'm not new.
Excuse my language. I was like, I was here when that started. But you know what? I was like, all right, fellas. So I had to go to the top all year because I was new. It was funny. But that was a good group that we had with Justin Green, Mike Perini, Scooty Guyton. We didn't quite have the year we wanted to. Justin Green got hurt down the stretch, and that really affected us. And Akron, that was kind of when Zeke Marshall kind of came into his own that junior year for him, and he had a really good year. And we ended up losing to them in the MAC tournament. But that was my first year back, and I've been here ever since. I'm going into my ninth year now with Coach Sendy.
Does it feel like you've been there forever, and yet at the same time, I'm sure it's gone very, very fast.
It does. I think out of the last 19 years, I've been at Kent 15 of them, 15 out of the last 19 years. But I've been in every role. That's what I tell everybody. As a player, I was a walk-on. I was a guy off the bench, role player, starter, all-conference player, Dobo/GA, assistant coach, associate head coach. You know, I've pretty much been everything besides a head coach. So I've kind of seen every experience. I've been through every, you know, there's not really much you could go through as a player that I haven't experienced at some level, which I think kind of helps me, you know, when some of our guys, like, they, you know, relating to them, because I've been there. And it definitely helps kind of give them some perspective and, you know, let them kind of speak on my experiences to kind of help get them through whatever they're going through. But, yeah, so it does feel like sometimes, you know, it's Groundhog Day. But that's where the kids, like, we, you know, the new group, you know, we have different, you know, every year it's a new group and different guys. And, you know, we've had a lot of assistant turnover over the years. We've had, you know, all teams now have player turnover.
Yeah, absolutely. But no question about that.
I mean, it's so much different. We, you know, very few people transferred back when I played. And now it's almost like a free agency. But so, yeah, it's just, it's, that's what keeps you going. Like, that's the new stuff, you know? And then as a coach, you're always trying to, you know, develop different areas of yourself in terms of, you know, on court skill work, you know, concept, all sorts of stuff. You're always trying to improve and trying to find different ways to kind of, you know, get these kids to understand, how hard they need to work, or just how to reach them, you know, how to connect with them at their level. You know, and it does really go back to the old adage, like, they really don't know how much you know until they know how much you care. And that, like, that's said a lot, but that is so true. That is so true. And, you know, I've since I've met my wife is very outgoing. Like, she loves the guys, loves the kids, like, wants to cook for them, have them over, you know, is interested in how they're doing in personal life, school. And she really taught me the value of that, you know? She's actually helped me become a better coach, because I'm much more aware of that and knowing that, you know, I need to spend time with these guys, not just on the court, but, you know, at the hub, or, you know, getting something to eat with them or doing whatever, you know, and just spending that extra time that you don't have to, but it just goes a long way so that they know you really care about their development and how they're doing as young men.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's definitely changed from a coaching standpoint is, you know, I think more people are much more aware of the fact that those relationships are so important to what, you know, to what you have to do in order to be able to get the maximum out of your kids. If you're going to be able to push them, you got to have that relationship that, yep, you know, is based on putting time in with them. And I think that's key. I want to wrap up here, Eric, by asking you a two-part question.
Yep.
And that is, one, on a day-to-day basis, or as you look forward, what's your biggest challenge that you guys have at Kent? And then, when you get up in the morning, what's the one thing, if you could point to one thing that you love about your current job and what you do every day, what is that one thing? So your biggest challenge, and then what it is that you love about what you do.
I think our biggest challenge is, the biggest challenge is, like, getting every guy on the team to realize that to be a great team, everybody has to sacrifice a little bit of their individuality, whether it's their, you know, their minutes, points, shots, you know, all sorts, you know, everybody has to give a little, you know, and we're in a society now that, like, we're like the seventh voice each one of these guys hears every day. And everybody else is telling them how they need to, you know, it's all about them. And, you know, a parent of one kid doesn't care about another parent's kid. You know what I mean? Like, they only look at it through their perspective that, you know, if it's me, my mom only cared about how Eric was doing. She didn't care how big John was doing, you know, like, so she only sees it through that prism or that perspective. And, you know, when seven or eight people are telling you that, and then your coach is telling you something different, you know, sometimes it's hard to give into that, you know, and really sacrifice for the team and give up, you know, some of your individual success, not even success, but your individual, what you want to achieve for the, to help the team achieve its overall goal. And that's so hard, man. And it's, you know, in the preseason and skill workouts, stuff like that, like, you know, the kids are always, they're cheering each other on. They're helping each other through it. They're rooting for each other. You know, they got great body language, but there's no adversity. You know, there's no coach really jumping you. your minutes aren't getting cut. You know, you're not getting, you know, you're all getting the same amount of shots. Hey, everybody's on the court, you know, no one has to sit down. So like it's that's when you really know, is when you get in the season and now, you know, yeah, you're playing 5 minutes a game or you're not playing at all, or this guy's playing 30, to still have that same mindset that you had in skill workouts or in the preseason or in practice when they're not keeping stats. You know, it's easy to share the ball in practice when you know, you know, that number's not ending up online.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep, no doubt.
It's easy. Like, I can't tell you how many times we've had, and I'm like, man, we're really moving the ball this year. Then we get in the game, and it's like, yeah, I think the ball has super glue on it. I'm like, well, what happened here? Oh, man, keep the stats now. You know, and it's so hard. And it's hard. I feel bad for the kids because it's just become that type of society, that self-serving, you know, it's all about me type.
I can't imagine playing in today's era where everything is so dissected and so public.
I know.
And obviously it was to some degree back when you were playing, when I was playing and there was coverage, but it's nowhere near what it is today, where anybody and their mom and their dad and can make comments on social media and you get all that stuff out there. It's just, I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to be a 19-year-old kid trying to handle that stuff.
Those NBA players are like the shot clock at the end of the game is about to wear out and they pass the ball to the other guy because they don't want to turn over on their staff.
Yeah. I mean, that's unbelievable, right? Like, and it's just how this deal is. Now, I want to say we have really good kids. Like, you know, what I'm talking about, every team goes through this. But,
oh, for sure.
You know, we've been blessed. I mean, you don't, you know, we haven't had a losing season in 20 years here.
That's incredible. That's still incredible to me. Just the run that we've been able to go on with just the change in the turnover in the staff and the turnover at the top with the coaching. And it's just the fact that the sustained excellence of the program is just, it's a testament to, you know, obviously what you guys have been able to do, but just to the players that have gone through and to every coach that's gone through there. It's amazing.
It is. It doesn't get enough credit. Coach, in my opinion, Coach Sendy doesn't get enough credit in that regard. And just terms of, like, you know, again, like, I know people aren't happy. 2 years ago, we went 17-17. You know, we weren't happy either. Like, believe me.
Exactly. You were the unhappiest guys.
People around campus. But again, if you go through every team, like, everybody has a drop off. Everybody has a, you know, 9-22 or 11-18 year. And some have a few of them. And we've never had that. We've never had the drop. Knock on wood. Really, that's a testament to our kids and the culture you know, the guys kind of having that sense of pride about being at Kent State and, you know, having a lot of former players that have worked or been on staff throughout the years that can speak on their experiences. And it really is a brotherhood. I mean, I think you saw that, Mike, at the alumni game. You know, we all, you know, it's special
being
a Golden Flash, man. It's not like that everywhere else. It really isn't. I've been in other places and talked to friends that have been in other places. We do have something special here as former Flashes. And you know, we just had a lot of good kids and good people and a lot of success. And it's just, I don't know, it's something about it. There is something special about Kent State. I mean, you know, the people and just there's something about it. It's a really, really neat place. And the program is it's different. It's definitely different.
Yeah, the success that we've been able to accomplish is like I said, it's incredible. I marvel at it all the time. That, you know, I think about the program that I came into when I was a freshman and to where it is now, you know, some whatever 30 years later. I'm just amazed by the success that we've been able to have, and you know, I couldn't be prouder. It's nice to be able to have a piece of it that. It never goes away. You know, you see the scores, you go and check out a game, you walk around the halls, you go in the coach's office, you get a chance to, you know, sit and watch them play and compete. And it's just fun. It's fun to know that you're a part of that. And that makes you feel good about things. So, so we appreciate that. All right. So what's your favorite thing? What's your favorite thing about day to day? What you get to do?
I wake up. It's just being able to be with the guys. It really is. I love that part of my job, being on the court with them, spending time with them in the office, joking around with them, building those relationships, seeing them develop, like seeing them starting to, you know, kind of make that jump as a man and as a player, and just seeing them grow. It's just like it's awesome. I mean, and you guys know, I mean, if you're a coach, like you understand, like it's just there's nothing more rewarding that, you know, they talk about servant leadership. There's nothing more rewarding than helping someone else. You know, helping a player get to somewhere where maybe they didn't think they could get to, or seeing something that you've worked on, you see them do it in a game and they kind of look at you and give you like a wink. You know, I really feel as a coach, you're never going to be fulfilled by the wins, the championships, the NCAA tournament appearances. That's not what's going to fulfill you. That'll make you happy in the short term. But what fulfills you is the impact you can have on these young men that we get to deal with or get to be around every day. And that's what's lasting. And that's what gets me up in the morning. Like, I'm excited. We have 7 a.m. We've had 7 a.m. workouts for last week, this week, and then next week. And I'm telling you, I can't wait till 7 a.m. to be on the court with those guys, you know, because they're going to come in all sleepy, rubbing their eyes. And I'm just going to hit them with a ton of energy right away. And I know they look at me like, man, Coach, he's crazy. But they know if I didn't do that, they'd be like, what's wrong with Coach?
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, that's what I do. I want to get those guys going and just have fun out there with them and just see them develop. That's the best part of this whole deal.
Part of you wants to torch them all, right?
What's that?
The part of you wants to torch them, so though, when on the floor, right?
Wait, say that again.
Part of you wants to beat them, right?
Oh yeah.
On the floor.
I mean, I always tell them, like, they'll say, hey man, coach, let's do a shooting competition. I said, man, yeah, you'll hurt my RPI, man. Right? you got to beat some people before
you. You got to step up your game before you get to the highest level, right?
But I haven't lost one to a player in my 10 years here as a coach. So I'm hoping to keep that streak going.
Keep that streak alive for sure. Definitely want to keep that going.
Yeah, they definitely try me. Then they say, well, let's play one on one. I'm like, look at me, man. I'm gonna play one on one.
Different game altogether there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Eric, we can't thank you enough for jumping on and spending an hour and a half with us tonight. It's been a lot of fun to hear your backstory, a lot of which I wasn't aware of. And so I think that was enlightening for me. And I'm sure anybody out there who's a fan of Kent State basketball will enjoy, you know, getting a chance to listen to your story and learn more about what makes you tick and what your career has been all about. And so just want to say thanks. And before you get out of here, if you wouldn't mind sharing out how people can get in touch with you, share your contact information. And then if there's anything else that you want to leave us with a parting shot, you can go ahead and do that as well.
Obviously you can reach me by my email. That's ehaut@kent.edu. And also, my cell phone, everybody has it anyway. It's 330-604-6758. I can be reached on there, text. If I don't have the number saved, I'm just gonna let it go to voicemail. So it's probably better to text. Would love to help anybody that has any questions or wants to talk ball or, you know, anything. You know, I'd love to hear from them. And I just want to say go Flashes, obviously. And I appreciate you guys having me on. I hope I wasn't too long-winded about my story kind of coming up, but it's kind of a long story. But I appreciate you guys having me, and would love to do it again sometime. And Mike, we got to get you back down here for the alumni game.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if we're gonna do it this summer or if we're gonna do it like biannually.
Yeah. So
it keeps that we don't fall into that monotony where, you know, it's
becomes older. Guys don't come. I mean, you got to make it. Got to make it unique. Got to make a push so guys can get there. And I know that on my end of it, I'm always trying to push guys to get out there and come back. And I'm fortunate because I'm not that far away, so I can always get down to a game or two every year.
We'll have some Hoopheads pod coverage at the next.
Yeah,
one.
There you go. We'll bring the mobile podcasting center down to.
They missed a heck of a game last year, huh, Mike?
I mean, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, with the half court buzzer beater. I ended up on the wrong end of it though.
I heard Mike was dropping some threes.
Yeah, my goal before I got there was I wanted to score, so I accomplished that. And I don't know if you know this, but I played on a torn ACL. So
I did not know that.
Yeah. So my
tore his ACL like 4 or 5 years ago. He never got it fixed.
Yeah, it was like it's been like 5 years since I tore it, that was actually the first time I've played on it in five. So I hadn't played in like 5 years.
When you shot it, it was like riding a bike.
Well,
right?
He still shoots,
I still shoot a little bit. But yeah, it was. So that was my two goals were to make a basket, which I accomplished, and to not have to go to the doctor the next day, and I accomplished that too. So it was a success all the way around.
Definitely. We had our whole team there, so there was a lot of pressure on me.
You had to do some stuff.
For 5-3, they'd have been on my head. So no, I was just glad I hit my first couple threes, and I told them this is what the one deal we had is if I took a charge, they all had to run out on the court and pick me up. And I don't even know if you remember this. I took the charge on Julian Sullinger, and the ref called a block.
Yeah, I do remember that.
I was so sick about that. I was on that ref for the rest of the game just because I wanted the guys that to run out and pick me up.
That would have been awesome.
Worst question in basketball: block or charge?
That's right.
I'm watching Rex Chapman's Twitter.
Yeah, I was gonna say it, but I didn't know if you knew Rex Chapman.
Best account ever. So that one and that 70s sports. Those are my two go-to Twitter accounts for humor. Yeah. So.
Look that one up. I haven't heard about that one.
That 70s sports, you'll appreciate it because it's all stuff from the era when you and I probably grew up, and so they have like different ads and weird photos. The guy makes captions on it. It's classic. So you definitely want to look that one up.
There was one yesterday where a guy was smoking a cigarette at halftime, and he's like, "Oh, this is the way the NBA used to be." Guys sitting in the locker room smoking a fat one.
I'm definitely looking that up.
Yeah, you got to look that one up. So
that 70s sports.
That 70s sports. Yep.
Gotcha.
It's worth it. And anybody else out there, look it up. It's a good Twitter account. We highly recommend it here at the Hoopheads Podcast. Eric, again, thanks so much for jumping on. It's been a pleasure. We're definitely gonna have to do it again. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.